This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up is the repeal to repeal Obamacare on life support. Chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows is here in just a moment. Also, yesterday we discussed the 7-2 Supreme Court decision in the Trinity Lutheran case and how it was a victory for religious freedom. But there were two justices that sided against the church. Why? Terry Jeffrey with CNSNews.com is here to explain. And a law that I co-authored and helped pass 16 years ago is being challenged by the abortion industry, claiming it closed down all but three of Louisiana's abortion clinics. The Louisiana Solicitor General, Elizabeth Merrill, joins me with the details later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Let me remind you, we're coming up to the end of our fiscal year, the end of this week, June the 30th. And this is when we need your support. Keeps the Washington Watch on the air across the country. And I want to thank those of you who called in yesterday or emailed in. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Right there on the website, you can make a contribution or you give us a call as well. But we would very, very greatly appreciate your support in keeping this program on the air all across America. No government money, no advertisers. It's just partners like you. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, yesterday we were, before I get to Congressman Meadows and the latest on the debate over the repeal of Obamacare, yesterday we were talking about the GuideStar, the latest with GuideStar, removing the labels that they had put on almost 50 nonprofit organizations, most of which were Christian. The label from the Southern Poverty Law Center as hate groups. Well, today, Liberty Council out of Orlando, Florida, that's Matt Staver, who's been a guest on the program. I'm going to have him on tomorrow. But they filed a federal lawsuit against GuideStar over false and defamatory hate group labeling that GuideStar had been using. So that lawsuit could be significant against GuideStar. It charges them with a violation of the law in Virginia. And so it's actually been filed in the Federal District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. So we're going to talk with Matt Staver about that tomorrow. It's breaking news coming out just this afternoon. All right, a lot of discussion going on about Obamacare. Yesterday, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had said that there was going to be a vote before the 4th of July break, backing away from that, saying it'll be after the 4th. The president, though, after meeting with a number of senators, and I had several conversations last night myself with some senators who are working on some of the issues related to the repeal bill that were problematic, the president sounding pretty optimistic. This is what the president had to say earlier today.
We're talking about a great, great form of health care. Obamacare is dying. It's essentially dead. You don't give it the subsidy, it would die within 24 hours. It's been a headache for everybody. It's been a nightmare for many. And we are looking at a health care that would be a fantastic tribute to our country. Health care is working along very well. We could have a big surprise with a great health care package.
So the president sounding very optimistic that the differing opinions in the Senate can be bridged and they can come together with a plan that has to do quite a bit. I mean, the acid test, as we've long talked about, with the repeal of Obamacare, and remember, we're kind of have to drive in a very narrow lane here because this is a reconciliation bill, a budgetary bill. Can only deal with budgetary matters. It's not, and the purpose of using the reconciliation vehicle is that it only requires 50 votes. You just have to get a majority of the votes in the Senate to pass. You don't have to use that 60-vote threshold. 51 votes, it passes. And so they're limited on what they can do with that. Therein kind of lies the problem. You got to thread this needle. And the big issue is, does it bring down health care premiums when you're buying insurance? Does it bring down those insurance premiums so that, you know, 2 years from now, when people are paying for health care, is it less? I mean, we've seen in some states it's going through the roof as we see fewer and fewer providers in the government Obamacare exchanges. It also has to be pro-life. And that's been the area we've been focusing on very, 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 very intently. First, it's a given. Planned Parenthood has to be defunded. Now, some have raised the question with me, you know, this only defunds for a year. Well, the government only budgets for a year. I mean, we only commit to pay things for a year. It just kind of gets done year after year, and it's kind of routine. This will be the first time that we've seen Planned Parenthood defunded. It takes about 86% of their federal funding, and it goes away. Now, that means the onus is on them next year to convince Congress that they need to be put back into the budget and they need to get this money. After all of the scandals they have been involved in with, you know, the undercover videos showing that they were essentially trafficking in aborted baby body parts. So that has to happen. There are other issues. Some, as the states have expanded Medicaid, some senators want to make sure that expansion money remains so the states can broaden the health care, supposedly for the indigent, but that's not really what it is. I mean, we're talking about these subsidies going to families that are families of four making, you know, 350, 400% of poverty, which is roughly $75,000 a year. I mean, we got to get back to the principle of what is the role of government. And I'm one of my concerns is seeing that the Republicans are a little too timid about the fact that, look, before Obamacare, you know, we had issues in our healthcare delivery system, no question about it. A lot of it, though, brought on by kind of this hybrid system we had with the interjection of Medicare and Medicaid and not pure market forces driving the cost of healthcare. And that's kind of what got it all out of whack to begin with. So the more you can allow market forces to drive something, the better off you are. Well, you have many Republicans now essentially seeing healthcare as a government entitlement. And if that's the starting point of how we're going to fix Obamacare, then we got a problem because you're not going to fix it. And that's kind of the competing forces. There are some that say, "Well, we got people now dependent upon this, and we got to keep it." And I'll remind you of I've talked about this before, but on the eve of this passing, I was having dinner with a Blue Dog Democrat. Not many of those left; only about two. And the reason they're not here is because they were led along to vote for the Obamacare repeal or the Obamacare initially. And as a result, they were defeated in their reelections. But I was having this dinner with a Blue Dog Democrat, and all the polling was showing that they were going to get hammered in the upcoming election if they forced this on the American people. And I remember saying, you know, look, Nancy Pelosi, remember, was the Speaker, House Speaker at the time. The Democrats had the majority in the House. I said, don't you realize? I mean, the president had the majority, both houses, both chambers. Don't you realize that Democrats are going to get clobbered in this and you're going to probably lose your majority in the House? And his response was immediate. They understand that, but they understand that they will fundamentally change government and the Republicans will not undo it. That was almost 9 years ago. And guess what? I think he nailed it. The Republicans, Not all, okay? So I want to be very careful here not to paint all Republicans with a broad brush. We're going to have Congressman Mark Meadows on in a few minutes. They're voting on the House floor. Clearly, they're the Freedom Caucus, the Republican Study Committee. You know, there are conservatives that are solid that understand this is Obamacare and anything like it is not good. But there are others who like this Blue Dog Democrat described, do not have the backbone to undo what the Democrats put in place. And that's been the problem. That's how we see this this slippery slope where the Republicans, the Democrats, when they're in power, like Obama, pushing all this radical stuff, and he wasn't the first. He was just extreme. I mean, Bill Clinton had some radical ideas too. Not nearly as radical as Obama, but they would push it. The Republicans would come in, gaining power in a large part because the American people were tired of what was being done and didn't agree with it. But the Republicans never dialed it back. They just stopped it. They just stopped it. But they never undid the damage that was done. And that's one of the things I've been talking about since before the election, that whoever came in would have to be intentional in undoing the damage done by the Obama era. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. Congressman Mark Meadows, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, will be joining us in a moment. They're wrapping up the votes on the House floor. They scheduled some votes at the last minute after we had scheduled Mark to come on the program. He's going to be talking about the latest in the negotiations. He's actually involved in the negotiations because of how this all played out in the House. It's very interesting, almost the exact same scenario. Ready for a vote in the House. They pulled it back because they didn't have the votes. 2 weeks of intense negotiations during a break. The Freedom Caucus, very much involved in that. We were involved in that with the White House. And they came to an agreement, and the bill got better. And then it went to the Senate. And so now the Senate is in the same place. They had to pull back from this vote. They're now in intense negotiations, and we're hopeful they will come out with a better piece of legislation. And joining us now, fresh off the House floor, is the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Congressman Mark Meadows. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you. My apologies, we were voting, and so I'm just joining you to try to give you the very latest update from the Senate on health care. And obviously it is the next 72 hours will be very key as we look at the repeal and replacement of Obamacare.
All right, well, give us the latest as you catch your breath after you ran off the House floor.
Well, I can tell you that we are making progress, contrary to some of the headlines that are out there that would say that this deal is dead. The president himself, as well as members of the administration, are engaging personally with senators. I've had conversations throughout the day. And I can honestly say that I'm optimistic that we will make two or three amendments that will not only drive down premiums, but make the bill better, both for those that are concerned about pre-existing conditions and those in poverty, as well as those that believe in the free market where we need to be driving down premiums. So really with your listeners, if they will continue to weigh in with their senators to let them know how important it is to them. But it's all about driving down premiums and making sure that pre-existing conditions are there. Senator Ted Cruz has got what I call the Consumer Choice Amendment. And if indeed that amendment is adopted, it will go a long way to help.
Mark, we're up against a hard break. Can you hold on just a few minutes?
Sure.
Okay, hold on. Folks, don't go away. We'll come right back.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Not everybody thinks so. Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. The school system there is one of the largest in the United States, and its close proximity to Washington, D.C. has made it a target for the efforts to mainstream this radical ideology. Even after the Trump administration revoked Obama's directive threatening the nation's public schools, the fight continues at the state and district level. But parents and concerned citizens can fight back. In a recent panel discussion, three different perspectives from a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney are presented. They expose the tactics used by the transgender lobbyists and explore the strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back. Discover how to implement a five-point plan to educate, explain, engage, empower, and elect in order to combat the transgender ideology in public schools. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And holding over for us to finish our conversation, the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows, just wrapped up some votes on the House floor. We're talking about what's happening over in the Senate as it pertains to the repeal and replace of Obamacare. Mark, thanks for holding on. You know, they did tell me a long time ago when you do live programming, never do live programming with children, animals, or politicians. Yeah, so anyway.
Well, my apologies for messing things up, but it is live, and I guess your listeners are getting it in real time, so it's great to be with you. But where we were following before the break was about Senator Cruz's consumer choice amendment. If your listeners would call their senators and just ask them to support Ted Cruz Consumer Choice Amendment. It will go a long ways to driving premiums down across the board and would be good policy. And so if there's one ask I would have, it would be that. But I am optimistic that we're going to get there, Tony.
All right, let me we had a conversation this morning, so we discussed quite a bit of this morning. I want to ask you, because this is one of the things I'm getting from some of my listeners, and it's something I was a little surprised by what you told me this morning on this, but you've been studying this thing. You've been running the numbers. You've become kind of a policy geek when it comes to the health care issue. And that is, you know, the opening up of the insurance pools across state lines, allowing to pull across state lines. That's not as big of a reduction in premiums as we might think.
Well, you're right. And, I mean, it's something that I campaigned on, and it was really my default that I would run to. And it was, I said, well, if we can just have competition of across state lines, it'll draw premiums way down, but it really makes about a 1-2% difference. Most of the drivers of cost, some 54% of the drivers of cost, are really the regulations in Obamacare. So even if we kept the regulations of Obamacare in place and had competition across state lines, you probably wouldn't notice the difference. And so that's why Senator Rand Paul and Senator Mike Lee and Ted Cruz have been working around the clock to do those things that affect moms and dads and aunts and uncles the most, and that's about driving their premiums down so they don't have to make a choice between a mortgage payment and an insurance payment.
And part of the issue is the vehicle we're using here, reconciliation. If I'm not mistaken, the issue of state lines would probably not fit within the reconciliation measure.
You're exactly right. And part of the reconciliation instructions has just certain committees, and that competition across state lines goes into the Commerce Committee, of which it wasn't part of this tool that were there. Now, we're trying to look at really the next budget reconciliation instructions to make sure it would include that committee. So there may be a tweak that we could make to it when we look at tax reform or some of the other things. But really, right now, based on the Senate rule, it would be impossible to get it through on this repeal and replacement measure.
So, Congressman Meadows, let's talk just a few minutes about some of the other issues. A lot of our listeners are concerned about some of the things, I mean, beyond the premium, obviously cost is the major factor, but also there are concerns about, number one, the defunding of Planned Parenthood. Do we have the commitment that stays in? And the funding of taxpayer funding of abortion. There's some concerns about the way that measure is shaping up in the Senate.
Well, and everyone, your listeners have every right to be concerned, and they need to be praying for that, those decisions. You've been a champion of that. You've made it very clear to the president, to the leader, to the speaker, that without those protections, you will not be supportive, nor a number of other pro-life groups would they be supportive. And so I can tell you Planned Parenthood is staying in. We're doing some workarounds to make sure that the life protections on any government funding does not indirectly fund abortions. I think we've got a fix there, but it's all about making sure that we have the backbone to stay with those convictions so that they don't cave at the last minute. You know, I'm not going to vote for it if it has an initiative that doesn't protect life, and I'm not alone in that.
The president sounding pretty optimistic earlier today that a bill's going to emerge. What you said 72 hours. You think we're going to see something before the end of the week?
Well, I don't think that we will see it before the end of the week in terms of out for the public. But I do think the next 72 hours are critical because I think we'll have some agreement in principle. Either if we do, then they've still got to work the legislative text and the amendment process. But, yeah, the president is very optimistic. I share that optimism. And let me just say, anybody can knock the president that they like, but he has worked this harder than anybody I know and has been personally engaged around the clock to do it. So hopefully we'll see him fulfill a campaign promise he made to the American people. I believe we will.
All right, to recap here as we go out, the Cruz Amendment, you said you want people to contact their senators. State that again for us.
Yeah, it's the Cruz Consumer Choice Amendment, and it allows, what it basically does, if you have an Obamacare plan, it allows you to keep it, but it also allows you to purchase a cheaper program and still qualify for the subsidies that are in place. It will have a dramatic impact on rates. So that's, again, the Cruz Consumer Choice Amendment. If they'll just say, please support that. If they have a Republican senator, it would be critical, and their call would be very timely.
All right. Congressman Mark Meadows, as always, my friend, great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Tony. God bless you.
All right. Congressman Mark Meadows, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. As you are contacting your senators, and you'll have an opportunity because they're going to be back home during the 4th of July break, and it's a great time to talk to them about this. In addition to the Cruz Consumer Choice Amendment, we want to make sure that these measures are pro-life. Non-starter if Planned Parenthood is not defunded. Got to happen. Secondly, we cannot have a continuation of taxpayer funding of abortion, which is what Obamacare did. You know, and I remind people that almost killed Obamacare at the very beginning. And it wasn't until former Congressman Stupak was given that fraudulent executive order by the president promising that it would not fund abortion. And of course, that proved to be, as I said, fraudulent. All right, when we come back, a bill that I helped pass 16 years ago in Louisiana, being challenged now by the abortion industry. The Solicitor General of the state of Louisiana joins us when we return.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we did get a little bit of economic data coming out. Pending home sales down again in May. This is the third straight month in a row pending home sales are down. This is not good news. This is more an inventory problem than it is anything else, because pending home sales were up for the last 6 months prior to this. So obviously it has to be down. There is little inventory. What that means is it's a seller's market, because prices will be going up. You can count on that since inventories are so low. We did see oil supplies increase, not a lot. One report, API, has it up about 850,000 barrels. That's not a lot, but it's kind of getting offset as a result of gasoline inventories being down considerably. The reason why that offsets it is obviously they can count on a drain of the oil supplies as they're going to step up refinery capacity to meet the need for gasoline. So we'll watch that, but nonetheless, there's a little bit of stability for at least today in the markets as a result of not a lot of bad news. U.S. trade deficit fell 1.8%. That's good news. And retail inventories. This is hard to believe. I don't know why retailers would be inventorying anything right now. But nonetheless, inventories in retail up over a half of 1%. And it looks like, once again, the markets are blowing off the lack of legislative process in Washington.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. All right. The New York-based Center for Reproductive Rights has filed a federal lawsuit in Baton Rouge this week challenging seven abortion restrictions, which the Louisiana legislature passed. Now, it at issue. Let me give you a little history. Back in 1999, I authored and passed a piece of legislation in Louisiana, House Bill 320, which prior to then, abortion clinics were exempted from government regulation under the Ambulatory Surgical Regulation Center policies. I simply removed the exemption, and they fell into the category of ambulatory surgical centers and had to meet the requirements. Well, the same outfit, the New York-based Center for Reproductive Rights, filed suit, went to federal court, and there was one aspect that the court found that they won, and they overturned the law. Well, we came back in 2001, and HB 949, which Rodney Alexander, former congressman who is now retired from Congress, he was the chairman of the committee, and he handled the legislation that year, addressing the one issue and then putting in place licensure requirements for abortion clinics. I mean, simply to make sure they are sanitary. And in fact, I could go into great detail of what helped pass that first law back in 1999. Rusty instruments, dirty, filthy abortion clinic rooms, examining rooms. Well, David Brown with the Center for Reproductive Rights in New York says that since that law passed in 2001, more than 1,000 related regulations have piled up. Gosnell. Remember that name in Philadelphia and how dirty, unregulated that clinic was and what has happened as a result of that? That's why these are being regulated. Well, the center's president and CEO, Nancy Northrup, says the burdensome rules include letting the government review medical records of every woman who has had an abortion, requiring doctors, quote, to provide their patients with misleading or false information about abortion, such as the bogus claim that abortion causes breast cancer. End quote. Bogus? Not so sure about that. Well, joining us now to discuss this is the Louisiana Solicitor General, Elizabeth Merle. Elizabeth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I understand from the statement released by the Attorney General that you are prepared to defend the law, that you think the law is completely constitutional and defendable in court.
Absolutely. We think these laws are constitutional, and we don't really see any difference in this particular lawsuit and a lawsuit that was dismissed by the same, you know, that was filed by the same plaintiff a couple of years ago against the state.
So why 16 years after the law went into effect are we seeing a lawsuit now? Now, one clue is that they're complaining that back when the law went into effect, there were 11 abortion clinics in Louisiana. Now there are only three. Is it that the fact that they have to live by the law is hurting their business?
Well, I mean, I think that they are working very diligently, not just in our state, but in other states, to try and expand the Hellerstedt opinion. So they, if you read that petition and you go back and look at that opinion, they're picking up on some of the they're tracking some of the similar factual allegations and trying to expand the scope of Hellerstedt.
So what other abortion-related laws are currently being defended by the Attorney General from the state of Louisiana?
We are currently defending what we believe to be the largest challenge that we've seen. This one is pretty large, too, because it covers a wide scope of statutes and regulations. But the last summer, the same group, the Center for Reproductive Rights, filed a suit against the state on seven new laws that had been passed by the legislature in the 2016 regular session. So those laws included new licensing requirements for doctors that required them to be licensed as family medicine docs or OBGYNs, prohibitions on trafficking fetal tissue and remains, criminal penalties for trafficking human remains, cremation and burial requirements, funding restrictions, and a 72-hour waiting period and a dismemberment ban. So we're litigating all of those, and we were in court about 10 days ago arguing motions to dismiss on that suit.
So it sounds like they're throwing everything they can against the wall to see if maybe the court will give them something that will stick against the state.
That's exactly right. And there is a third suit that they filed in state court on that has some overlap with this recent suit that was filed yesterday challenging the outpatient facility licensing regulation. So that's exactly right. They're throwing paint at the wall.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us today. We're up against a break, but let me just say this. I'm proud of my state of Louisiana being labeled as, I think, number one, being the most pro-life state in the nation. And my hat's off to the Attorney General, Jeff Landry, for defending these laws and for the work that his team does.
Well, thanks. We'll keep fighting.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. That's right. Louisiana, I hadn't seen last year's ranking, but Louisiana's consistently been at the top of Planned Parenthood's naughty list for being pro-life. And I'm glad to have been a part of that. And I'm thankful we have Attorney General, Jeff Landry, in the state that's aggressively defending these laws. And they're solid. But as I said, I think they're going after everything, hoping that the court will feel sorry for them and give them something. All right, when we come back, Terry Jeffrey joins us to talk about, yes, the victory was 7-2, but why two justices against religious freedom? We're going to talk about that next. Don't go away.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
It's summertime and the kids are out of school. Unfortunately, that means more screen time. 1 Million Moms wants to help keep your family safe. Join 1 Million Moms to stay current on any new TV series or commercials that might prove harmful. You can stay up to date with our action alerts as a heads up and as a way to let your voice be heard. Sign up, speak up, 1millionmoms.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. I heard a spot on the radio recently where the person being interviewed discussed the fact that as she traveled around the United States speaking to various groups, often an overriding theme was that we are always speaking to the choir. This author speaker from London was trying to warn Americans of the threat of Islam, the danger of sanctuary cities and safe spots, and Sharia supremacy. But most of the people attending had knowledge of these matters. They themselves faithfully made efforts to get those apathetic ones to show up, but usually their efforts didn't pan out. The speaker strongly concluded by saying, "But never forget the importance of the so-called choir. The choir needs the encouragement that being with like-minded people brings and the reinforcement that truth is light and a lack of truth ushers in darkness." Thank you, choir. Keep on. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me remind you once again, kind of an end of fiscal year push. If you can be a partner with us to ensure that Washington Watch continues, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. We greatly appreciate your support. As I said before, we receive no government support funding, no commercial advertising. It's all about you. So go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I wanted to mention this in that last story about the actually, I'll get to that. I'll come back to this because I want to get on to Terry Jeffrey, our good friend from CNSNews.com. Very flexible today as we had to move things around with Congressman Meadows. On Monday, the Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision in the Trinity Lutheran Church case, at the playground case, we talked about it yesterday. That was a victory. We talked about it yesterday, how that was a victory for religious freedom. But there were two justices that voted against the church and was very explicit about it. One of them was. Why? Well, here to explain, Terry Jeffrey with CNSNews.com. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for being flexible. Appreciate you sticking around and coming on a little bit later in the program. You wrote a piece. It's in townhall.com. And by the way, folks, you can see this at TonyPerkins.com. Go there and you can follow the links over and read this. If you follow Justice Sotomayor's reasoning or her logic in this, in her dissent in this case, it's pretty far-reaching, is it not?
Well, it's crazy. I mean, it really is. I mean, as you mentioned in this case, it was 7-2. Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer, who are very liberal justices, joined with John Roberts and four of the other justices, said, look, this is discriminating against a Christian preschool by saying that because they practice Christianity, they can't compete for this grant put out by the state government to repave their playground with recycled tires. Justice Sotomayor went out of her way to write a 27-page dissent, which is almost twice as long as the opinion of the court. She was joined by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and what she argued is this Christian preschool is very frank about the fact that they practice their Christianity on the playground, as well as in their classrooms and in their church, and therefore they do not have a right to compete for a grant put out by the Missouri state government. And for the Missouri state government to give them a grant violates the First Amendment prohibition of the government establishing a religion. So she was literally arguing this is establishing a religion by giving a grant to a Christian school to repave its playground with recycled tires.
I mean, it was far-reaching. And, of course, the point you make is that if a public basketball team was going to play at a church or a school, Christian school, that could be a violation of her version of the separation of church and state.
It could. You know, the Missouri, when, you know, they reversed this policy, by the way, before it got to the Supreme Court, but the issue went ahead.
Which
the
is
Missouri
good.
Yes, it is. And it's good, but it's also good that the court established that this is illegitimate for the state of Missouri or any other state to do. That what the Missouri Constitution says is that the state could not spend money directly or indirectly in any way that aided a religion or sect or denomination. So in Sotomayor's extension of that argument here, except if she accepts that provision of their Constitution, is that you can't subsidize the playground, even on a competitive basis or on objective criteria. They defeated other nonprofits that were going for that funding. So if that's the issue, and the issue being because they practice their religion on the playground, Christian schools all over this country play many sports. They play them often or even all the time because they believe that advances their Christian mission. They're teaching these kids their faith in the athletic forum, as well as in the classroom and in the church. And they're also proselytizing their faith by giving an example of what they're doing and the way they do it in those athletic contests. So I think the logical extension of Sotomayor's argument could be that a public school cannot play a Christian school in a game of basketball or any other athletic event where funds are being spent by the government through their school in aiding a Christian organization in what the Christian organization understands to be an exercise of its Christian faith. And, of course, Christians exercise their faith everywhere they go. I mean, her opinion is so potentially radical, it's mind-boggling, but it actually is written down on paper by a justice of the United States Supreme Court.
But Terry, Jeffrey, this is really a reflection of the man who nominated her, in that this idea that religion has to be quarantined and separated from everything else in secular society.
It is, Tony. I agree with that. You know, in the Obama administration all the time, they used to talk about freedom of worship instead of the free exercise of religion, which is a right protected by the First Amendment. And, of course, Christians exercise their religion everywhere, not simply in a church. And, you know, this was the argument we saw where they wanted to force Christians to provide abortion-inducing drugs and devices, including, famously, the Little Sisters of the Poor. And according to Obama, it was okay for the Little Sisters of the Poor to be Catholic nuns inside a convent, but it wasn't okay for them to refuse to provide an insurance plan that ended up causing abortions. It's at the root of Sotomayor's dissent in this case is that same thinking, that Christianity itself is this alien phenomena that needs to be walled off from American society, and part of the role of government is to do that. It's a truly radical point of view that Obama appointed this woman to the Supreme Court, and even Elena Kagan, who he also appointed, in no way would have any part of that argument.
Yeah, it is interesting that I actually testified at her confirmation hearing against Kagan because of her radical views. But in this particular one, as you pointed out earlier, both Stephen Breyer and Elena Kagan, both liberals on the court, voted in favor of the church, but also made statements during the oral arguments. And I think one is very instructive that Breyer, the question that he asked, because essentially what Sotomayor is doing in her view is relegating people of faith to a second-class citizenship that are not due certain government services. For instance, Breyer asked the question, you know, are they not can they not have fire and police protection because they're at a Christian church or a facility? So, I mean, that's where her line of reasoning is taking us.
It is, and it's interesting that Kagan and Breyer were on the right side of this one. They've been on the right side of some other religious freedom questions in the past, but they've also been on the wrong side. Had there been five justices, even with Antonin Scalia having passed away, Had there been five justices in the Little Sister case, they could have solved that case on its merits. But they didn't do that. And that's in part because Kagan and Breyer wouldn't go the right way. So I think it remains to be seen, ultimately, what Breyer and Kagan's position is about protecting religious liberty.
Well, is it the religious liberty aspect that makes them unpredictable, or is it the subject matter of the religious liberty? In that case, the Little Sisters, it was abortion. I think you'll see a very similar response to them when it has religious freedom related to same-sex marriage or other issues. I mean, those two issues seem to be the dividing line for all liberals.
I agree with that. And an interesting part of this opinion, it's sort of a subtle thing, is there's a footnote. It's footnote 3. And Gorsuch, who I think is doing a good job, and Thomas both wrote concurring opinions saying they didn't agree with footnote 3, which said that this case applied only to this particular situation. And I suspect that that footnote was put in there by John Roberts to make sure that Elena Kagan would fully join the opinion, which she did. That's speculation on my part, but it was something that, you know, Gorsuch and Thomas disagreed with, but Elena Kagan did not, and I suspect that's why it's there. So I agree. I think down the road, when questions get closer to abortion and contraception and things like that, you're not going to be able to count on Elena Kagan or Stephen Breyer. But I think on religious freedom questions in general, you're never going to be able to count on Sotomayor.
Yeah, true. I mean, because there's nothing more, I think, clear-cut than this. I mean, playgrounds, you know, rubberized playground material for kids to keep them from getting hurt. Terry Jeffrey, as always, great to have you on the program, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Terry Jeffrey of CNSnews.com. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I've told you before, Terry's a great journalist. He this particular piece he wrote for Town Hall, but he does a lot of analysis. It's good stuff. So I highly recommend CNSnews.com as a source for you in tracking what is happening. Like us, they're a fully nonprofit, no government funding. They are all funded by folks like you. And so that's how you can get facts, the truth. All right, I want to go back to something we were talking earlier out of Louisiana, the Abortion Clinic Regulation Act, or licensure law that has been challenged going back to 2001. And in part, this is Nancy Northrup, who is the CEO and president of the Center for Reproductive Rights in New York. And they're the ones, I mean, they're always going in to these states that pass these pro-life laws, and they're challenging. And they're not being challenged from inside the state. They're being challenged from New York. All right. They say one of the issues, beyond the fact that since this law took effect, the state has started actually regulating like they do all of these medical facilities. And by the way, I was sharing this with my team earlier today when I actually had to face opposition from pro-lifers when I took this action back in 1999, because people said, pro-lifers said, well, you can't regulate them because that legitimizes these abortion clinics. Well, we had what brought this about was actually now Congressman Mike Johnson, who's been on the program a number of times. He was a young attorney. And we had known each other for quite some time. We were working together, and he had a client who nearly died at an abortion clinic in Baton Rouge. It's no longer there. And we were able to get working actually with another friend in the media. I had been a reporter prior to getting to the legislature, and had trained a particular reporter who was working, and she was able to go into this clinic and get some pictures. And we were able to use that to show the need for this law, because, you know, people just don't go into these abortion clinics. You don't see what's happening. And so we were able to pass the law. As I said, it was challenged by this New York group, overturned on one narrow aspect. The Foster administration, who was the governor at the time when I was in there, made this a priority. So they came back 2 years later after it was knocked down and passed this law. And as a result, they were regulated like everybody else. So one of the requirements was to tell people, the science, these women, the evidence that suggests that there is a connection between abortions and breast cancer. Now, this is one thing that specifically Nancy Northrup says, quote, they were challenging that this requires them to provide their patients with misleading or false information about abortion, such as the bogus claim that abortion causes breast cancer. Well, there's been a number of studies. In fact, there was this 73 studies in the correlation between induced abortion and breast cancer. Now, out of these 73 studies, there was a positive correlation of 57 showed that there was a connection. 34 of them showed that there was statistically significant. There is a lot of research done on this that is showing that there is a connection. There's enough to suggest there's a problem. This, of course, is not something that the abortion industry wants to know. They don't want the facts. They don't want to know. They don't want women to know. They don't want waiting periods. That's one of the laws they're challenging here in Louisiana, is that the 24-hour waiting period went to 72 hours. They don't want a woman to have to think about it. I remember when the 24-hour waiting period went into effect. And the significance of that has it, women have a time to process what they're doing and the choice that they're about to make. And so that these abortion clinics can't sell, you know, like a car salesman, can't sell this, you know, this abortion on an emotionally distraught young woman. And she can either seek additional counseling, advice, or think about it. And that's the purpose of the waiting periods. Planned Parenthood concerned about the women? The abortion industry concerned about the women? No, they're concerned about getting the abortion business. So they're challenging. I mean, in most of these clinic regulation acts that they've challenged, like this one here, requires these abortion clinics to operate up to standard. Have medical records on their patients in case, like we've seen, a woman has a negative reaction or a problem after the abortion and she shows up at the local emergency room, there needs to be some type of communication between the hospital and the abortion clinic. They need to know who to contact, find out what was done with her, what was done to her. They need to be clean, sanitary, basic stuff. You would think that the abortion industry would be concerned about the health of women. Not hardly. They're concerned about profit. Anyway, folks, we've seen over 350 pro-life laws that have been passed in the last 8 years through the states. Very positive development. Very positive. Our hats off to state leaders that are championing the pro-life cause. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks for joining us. And remember, the Apostle Paul says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.